Pettersson. Elias Pettersson scores! Kachuk scores! Matthew Kachuk! What a goal!
You're listening to...
Another chance! Great save by Markstrom!
Here's Kachuk. Oh, what a save by Demko!
Rintoul and Sermon.
Good morning, Vancouver, Calgary. How are we doing on this beautiful Monday morning. Oh my goodness. I'm throwing it out of whack here, folks. It is Rintoul, it is Sermon. Usually you hear the dulcet tones of Scott Rintoul when we come on the air. However, you know, it's 2021 and there's some technology issues that we're having right now. I thought actually it'd be myself this morning, but it is Scotty at the moment, so we'll get him connected as soon as we can. Our producer, as always, is Jamie Dodd. Jamie, are you by chance there this morning? Jamie? No, we don't. So it's just myself right now. We'll get Scotty connected as soon as we can. A beautiful weekend here in the Vancouver area. Lots of sun was shining all morning. I hope you guys got out there and got to enjoy yourselves. Myself, I did. Scott said to me on Friday, he said, the one thing, Karen, remember, don't go get a burn. Don't get a burn. What did I do? I go and get a burn. I had the sunscreen on, but just, I guess, you know, you don't realize how powerful that the sun is in April. Oh, Scott Rintoul, do I have you now?
Welcome to 2021. Welcome to 2021. And just to give you an idea, Karen, of my technological savvy here, here's what I've been doing. Because I've been listening to the show this morning on the... on the Comrex unit that I have at my house, and I was trying to interact with the station. I literally just unplugged the headset from one port, plugged it into the other, now have gone back to the point on the board that I was before, and apparently it works now, because that's how I fix things, Karen. That's how I fix things.
We always have to deal with certain things. You know, I thought it was going to be myself because I've been having some issues at home today. So I'm glad that it's not myself. I'm not glad that it was you to start off the show. But I tried to rag the puck as best I could. But Scott, we always appreciate you having been back on the air. I was talking to the listeners about the fact that the last thing you said to me on Friday was, you know, don't go and get a sunburn. And guess what I did on Saturday? Well, got a little bit of a sunburn. So, But it was a beautiful weekend out there, Scott. Did you have a good one as well?
I had a great one. Thank you very much for asking. It was fantastic, and for the first time in forever, there was a game to watch on the West Coast, and it was a nationally televised game.
Right?
And just to give you some context as to what's gone on here in the last little while, let this soak in for a second. Vancouver had not played a game since March 24th. We all know this. Mm-hmm. It's been well chronicled. During the hiatus, Karen, because of COVID, first of all, because of a schedule break for the Canucks, they finally got their rest. It was supposed to be about a week long. They were supposed to play the Calgary Flames. We all know now that didn't happen. During their hiatus, the Flames played 10 times. They went 4-6. Look at the standings today. The Canucks did not play in close to 4 weeks. And somehow, Vancouver is only 4 points back of Calgary with 6 games in hand. That is wild math.
How do you not lose more ground than that? I don't know how that can happen, Scott. That is surprising math, like wild and surprising, because you would have thought totally that there would have been some more games that the Calgary Flames could have gained, or more points that they could have gained on the Vancouver Canucks. Scott, I don't know if this says more about where Vancouver is in the standings or where Calgary is in the standings currently. Because if you're the Calgary Flames, you're looking at that math on both sides of you, Scott, Vancouver behind you and Montreal ahead of you, and you're going, this doesn't look very good right now.
It says a lot more about the Flames, quite frankly, because the Canucks still find themselves 10 points back of the Montreal Canadiens. They've got 4 games in hand on the Habs. But we all know that for either Calgary or Vancouver to mount some sort of plausible charge, Karen, that Montreal would have to fall on its face to a certain extent, and Calgary could have helped them along the way. This is the point that the Flames are at and the Canucks are at. And look, the Canucks are the talk of the hockey world right now because of what happened last night. And I want to get into this game in a second because there are a lot of different storylines that came out of what happened in Vancouver yesterday. The Flames and Canucks are at the point of the season from a standing standpoint where it takes about 3 consecutive wins to make the fan base believe, okay, something might be happening here. Maybe there's a little bit of traction. It takes one loss to make all of the air come out of the balloon, come back down to earth. Like, one loss feels like three, and three wins feels like one. That's how bad the math has been for these clubs.
Yeah, and when you look at the Calgary Flames, especially that one loss, Scott, that you says feels like three. I mean, when you have a 5% chance of making the playoff as is, but the math is still possible, that one loss is huge. And when that one loss is against a team that you're trying to chase in the standings, we had talked about it, Scott, what was it, five? They were playing Montreal five more times down the stretch, and basically maybe they could go with one loss in that stretch. Well, they just got that one loss. And, I mean, you look ahead at the schedule for the Calgary Flames. Yeah, they play Ottawa tonight, and we'll get into the struggles they've had against Ottawa. But, I mean, this week is absolutely monumental in the terms of where the Calgary Flames want to find themselves at the end of this week, because three games against Montreal. And if you have that one loss, well, there's no margin for error now.
It'll be interesting to see if there's any reaction from the Vancouver fan base as far as the actual chase for anything is concerned. Because going into last night's game, I think most people across the hockey world, not the least of which were the diehards on the West Coast, had resigned themselves to the fact that, look, this is just great news that this team can get back on the ice. But went into that game and, quite frankly, went into this 19-game stretch with very little expectation. And when you watch the way the Canucks came out of the gate last night, very understandably, you could get a sense as to why, Karen. We all predicted, projected, speculated, use whatever descriptor you want, about how this team would look coming out of COVID. We haven't seen anything like this before. We haven't seen a team delayed by this long, been infected across this percentage of its population on a roster. And it looked early like that game might get out of hand. Nylander scores less than 4 minutes into the game. The Canucks, hey, they're a bit of a ragtag crew. They're just trying to figure out who might be in a uniform last night. Did you have that same feeling early? Like, this could go toward a blowout?
Yeah, absolutely. As I was watching this game, it was like, okay, you know, some chances, but then there's a couple odd man rushes, Scott's poor turnovers in the neutral zone. I mean, that's just something where you look at, okay, these guys just haven't played hockey in a while. And like you said, when that Nylander goal was scored 3:45 in, I was basically saying to myself, okay, let's keep this respectable, right? Like, I don't want a 6-0 blowout and, you know, 40 to 10 shots or whatever the case may be. I just wanted to, like, okay, let's get a moral victory here. The moral victory is, you know, you're going to get on the ice for the first time in 20 some odd days. Play the game, make it look respectable. And I got to say, like, I mean, they were helped out quite a bit by their goaltender earlier on, Scott. They were helped out by a lot of good chances that kind of went, luck that went a little bit their way. But I did think that at first it's just like, let's just get through this. Let's just get through this. And, you know, maybe good things will happen going on. I will say this, Scott, and, you know, not to put my financial gain out there for the world, as soon as I saw how heavily favored the Leafs were, I'm like, I'm going to put a little bit of money on the Canucks. You know, not enough that I'm going to be disappointed if I lose it, but I'm like, you know what, these guys, like, there's some adrenaline that they'll be playing on, us against the world mentality, and thankfully at the end it came out like that. But yeah, early on I was a little bit worried that we were going to see a lopsided game, and it was going to be lopsided on the score sheet.
It would be hyperbole to suggest that the Vancouver Canucks are a fan favorite across Canada or across the hockey world. But there is an element of this, and we saw it toward the end of the Buffalo Sabres 18-game losing streak as well. You get a sense of what the team has gone through, and people just don't want it to be really bad for the group. Look, the Canucks, health-wise, have been through the ringer and then some. And I think there's a lot of people in the hockey world, and you tell us, 960, 960, or 650, 650, that win or lose, you just didn't want it to get ugly. And it was like that with the Sabres at the end of their winning streak, or losing streak, I should say, Karen, as well. You went, okay, enough is enough. Like, the Sabres have been a joke franchise for a really long time. We know that they may end up trading their star, but these players don't deserve it to be that bad. And you sort of felt like that for the Vancouver Canucks. No matter what happens against the Toronto Maple Leafs, Don't let it be an embarrassment. And it was anything but. And you're right. Brayden Holtby was a big part of it. Travis Green after the game. Like, they come back. Bo Horvat scores two of the three goals, gets an assist on the other. Nils Höglander gets it. And against all odds, they're going to get a point out of it. And then Horvat wins the game in overtime. Travis Green, you could hear it in his raspy voice because of what he's been through with COVID. Oh. He detailed it on the weekend. Have a listen to what he said this win meant for his group last night.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't just your regular win during the regular season. Yeah, it's a special win. We've gone through a lot here with our group over the last few weeks. It was a hard game. You're playing a really good hockey team on the other side. And proud of our group with how we stuck with it and won tonight.
And they did stick with it, Scott. I mean, like you said, just get through those first 10 minutes of the game. You get out of the first period with just a 1-0 deficit. Again, like when that Matthews scores, it's like, okay, can you just kind of hold on from here? But the Canucks didn't just hold on. There was some pushback for them, which was fantastic. And Scott, that pushback started with the captain, I thought. Like, I thought he played a phenomenal job, not just on the score sheet, Scott. I know the two goals and assist that he got last night, but I thought he was a real leader for what we saw from the rest of the Canucks on the ice last night.
Yeah, I'd flip the order of importance between the goalie and the captain, yeah. But your point is well made. They were both at the forefront of it. Braden Holtby and... we'll hear from Travis Green a little bit later on the show because, to paraphrase, he basically said what everybody else has said this year. Like, this guy's not had a good season in Braden Holtby. It has looked a lot like the last couple have in Washington. People thought maybe the bounce back under Ian Clark. Well, it hasn't materialized. But last night, Braden Holtby showed up. Bo Horvat has a history of this. Mm-hmm. There are times during the young man's career where people have said, he's not good enough defensively, and what's he going to be offensively? There have been a bunch of games over the course of his career where Bo Horvat has seen his team decimated either by injury or schedule or what have you, and he shows up and brings his best. He showed himself to be a playoff performer last year in the bubble. You go back a couple of years, there was a game against Vegas where the Canucks had basically nobody in their lineup a couple of years ago, and Horvat had a performance very similar to last night. Like, the Canucks had no business winning last night, and they had no business winning that game in Vegas a couple of years ago. And there are a lot of people believe that Horvat's performance at that time cemented his future status as the captain of this team. He is one of those players who shows up when adversity is at its highest.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, adversity is as high as last night. I don't think it's ever been higher, Scott. I was just so impressed with him. And just, you know, even you look at him, we saw him talk on Friday, Scott, and we saw him after the game. Like, it looks like COVID took a lot out of him too. Like, he just doesn't look like a healthy individual. Well, not a healthy, he's healthy enough to play, but he looks like a guy that's been put through the ringer from COVID. And he said he was one of the ones that, you know, he had it pretty bad, or he had it, but it wasn't as bad as some of his teammates. So for him to step back out there, and I thought his comments, you know, before the game, Scott, last Friday, were very telling and saying, like, yeah, you guys may not believe in us. People may not believe in us, but you know what? We have belief in ourselves, and we want to go out there and show you that we're still the team that you saw before, or even better than what you saw before the hiatus, and we want to go out and prove you wrong. And he took it upon his shoulders to lead that charge.
It was an admirable effort last night, and that's what it was, because they weren't the better team.
No.
Outchanced high danger-wise 21-5, but they made the most of their opportunities. I'm sure Jack Campbell wants that goal back in overtime. He's got to stop that one. And yes, that is part of the story in Leafs Nation today. We'll get to that throughout the course of the program. But I thought Holtby, Bo Horvat, even Tyler Myers, who...
oh, my goodness.
Tyler Myers wasn't great last night, but I don't think Horvat was superbly sharp. In fact, I don't think Holtby was the best that he can be, but you know what they had in common? They all just fought, and Holtby got stronger as the game went on, and Horvat got stronger as the game went on. And it sounds strange to say about Holtby in particular, Karen, because he made 37 saves. He had that barrel roll kick save.
Donnie
It was fantastic stuff. Like, it doesn't matter who stops a puck like that. You want to see a highlight like that as a hockey fan. And yeah, he got lucky on some occasions. I still don't know how Jason Spezza doesn't score that power play goal on the Leafs power play. But Braden Holtby, like Bo Horvat, like these other Canucks, they just kept battling, and the hockey gods smiled on him and his team.
Did you, watching Braden Holtby early in this one, Scott, it kind of looked like the rest of the Canucks. It was like he was fighting it in a little bit.
Yes.
You know, he was not in position every time, but he was able to get enough position to make some saves. And again, he did get lucky on a few chances. But again, it's just the you got to work your way into it. And he was working his way into the game. And that save, I mean, we're all going to point to the Dominik Hasek, like, windmill leg kick save that he made. But, I mean, Scott, like, look what that propelled them to. You know, less than just over a minute later, they get a goal and to tie the game up by Höglander. So, I mean, it was just, again, I'll keep using the word gutsy from the entire team, but especially that guy. And Tyler Myers, like, you just talk about him. Scott, 30 minutes and 8 seconds. 8 minutes on the penalty kill. 8 minutes on the penalty kill. Like, when you look at that, think about it. That's half a period on the penalty kill at one point. You know, like, that is insane. Yeah, you lose Alex Edler, and we'll get into that for sure as we go along here. But, I mean, to come back from what you've been dealing with off the ice, health issues, and to put 30 minutes in, I mean, I hope the guy gets a day off today and he's taking a hot tub and an ice bath, because, man, oh, man, like, again, just an incredible gutsy effort by someone thrown into it.
Win, lose, no matter what happened to this team last night, the question was always going to be the same for whoever came up to the podium. Like, what do you feel like right now? What is it like to play coming out of this? Brayden Holtby answered that question. Here's what he said.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously something that I've never been through before, and none of us have. So it's, you know, it was one of those where I think all of us just tried to get out there and do everything we can. We got a couple breaks in the first period, which I think we needed. So, you know, you take everything, you know, with a grain of salt. It's it was a good game. You know, I think we battled hard. Myself, there's still some things there that showed some rust and that kind of thing, and got away with. And in a day like this, you need that, and that's okay. So I think we're just happy to pull off a win. Winning creates some energy, some much needed energy, I think, that we're going to have to use to push through this schedule we have ahead of us.
And if the other teams that have gone through COVID outbreaks, though not as dire as what happened in Vancouver, any indication, the tougher times are yet to come. Dallas had the outbreak at the start of the season. Karen came out of the gate really strong, and then the schedule started to catch up with the Stars. Vancouver's going to have, I mean, tomorrow night, the Leafs are going to be a pretty motivated group. There are going to be some schedule issues that catch up. Maybe they catch a break in the sense that after the Leafs on Tuesday, it's a four-game series against the Ottawa Senators, who are playing better hockey, but are still the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, you know, don't ask Calgary Flames how they feel about the Ottawa Senators, Scott. But, you know, we saw New Jersey come to the gate with a couple of wins off of their COVID break. But again, the schedule did catch up to them. They went on a tailspin for losses, and basically their season was went downhill from there. The Sabres, I mean, they came out with a couple losses, but then we saw it again add up on them with 18 straight losses. So I do feel the tougher times are yet to come. But to get a win right out of the gate, Scott, and Travis Green said this after the game, he says, I think our players always believed, and the belief is there, but it's just nice to kind of get the, just add a little bit more to that, knowing, okay, like, we aren't at our best, but we still figured out a way to win, and we didn't give up, we didn't give in, and it wasn't a rout, and it just, we did feel that, okay, it's still hockey, and we still can push through the season.
For a team that basically showed up to the rink and went, okay, who's available to play? If you are, you get a jersey and you get to get on the ice. The last thing the Vancouver Canucks needed last night was to lose someone they were going to lean on a lot. And his name is Alex Edler. And he got kicked out of the game, and he should have been kicked out of the game. That is kneeing. It is textbook. And it was the right call by the officials. Alex Edler has a disciplinary hearing today for kneeing Zach Hyman. I get the sense the Vancouver Canucks are going to be without the services of Mr. Edler tomorrow night as well.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be at least one game, maybe two, Scott. I know in the second intermission of the game last night, Elliot Freeman pointed out a couple of examples to kind of compare this to Giordano, Dustin Brown, Taylor Hall. Two of those were two-game suspensions. One of those was one game. The Dustin Brown was a one-game suspension. So there is precedent for a suspension. I'm fine with it, Scott. It's one of those plays. I don't think it was intentional on his part, but the end of a long shift, he's tired and doesn't want to let the guy get by him. And, you know, it goes knee on knee. He deserved the five. He deserved the game. And he's going to deserve probably a suspension as well. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, the NHL is a tough one. I'm not going to sit here and try to predict what happens. I guess I sort of did that a minute ago. Look, we've seen incidents that I thought were going to be suspended earlier this year. They weren't. We saw others that went, oh, I guess they decided to suspend somebody. It's a fool's errand to try to go through this. However, if Hyman misses time, that is a big blow to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I understand why you can't govern this way. I know people have called for this over the years. Well, you know what? The guy who hits the player who gets injured should be out for the same amount of time. That's a great theory, except that we all know there are teams who would take a fourth-line player who got hurt. That's not what Zach Hyman is, by the way.
No.
But if a fourth-line player got hurt by a second- or first-line player, the team would just hold that guy out. Like, they would not be beyond doing something like that. There is this sense of justice to me, though, Karen, that if Zach Hyman can't play tomorrow, well, Alex Edler shouldn't play tomorrow either, given what he did.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I mean, Zach Hyman is very important to this Toronto Maple Leafs team. I'm sure they're pretty angry this morning on Toronto radio stations on 590 out there. But, I mean, it was a knee on knee. It's suspendable. Give him a game. Give him two games. I'm fine with that. Anything more, maybe there's a bit of an argument to be made. But if you look at what the NHL has done this season in terms of suspension, Scott, I know there's been no knee on knee and no knee in suspensions, but you're looking at probably a two-gamer. It's deservable. I mean, for those that are saying that he's a repeat offender and they point back to the Eric Staal one in
eight years ago.
like Tom Wilson's a repeat offender and he got seven games this season because he's a repeat offender. Like, this, you know, don't point to that. This is not Alex Edler. He's not a dirty player. It's an unfortunate situation. Shouldn't have done it. And he's going to pay the price for it.
Kevin BX explained it really well in the broadcast last night that it's a reactionary play. It's not a premeditated play. That doesn't mean it shouldn't be penalized. Look, if Alex Edler gets suspended, I won't be surprised. If he doesn't, because it's the NHL, I won't be surprised. He does not factor into this week's best player in Canada, however. Let's fire it up, Greg.
The competition is fierce.
Coast to coast, Connor McDavid has two. Another chance. Great save by Markstrom.
But only one player can wear the crown.
The king of the north.
Matthew scores. First of the year for Austin Matthews.
This is the best player in Canada.
As I said, the air went out of the balloon for the Flames on Friday, losing 2-1 to the Montreal Canadiens in their posts. Jake Allen got a lot of help from the Iron on Friday night. It had nothing to do with the guy at the other end, though he is the first nominee for best player in Canada over the past week.
Matthews won the draw. Mitch Marner's got it. Three shots, six shot attempts to lead the Leafs. A backhand in front. Back to Matthews. In front. Oh, what a stop by Markstrom. How did that not go? And play continues.
He was fantastic last week. The former Canucks netminder turned into a Flames free agency target. Jacob Markstrom, just 5 goals allowed over 3 games, Karen. 932 save percentage. Had no chance on either of the goals that beat him on Friday night in Montreal.
Yeah, and you know what? If you're the Calgary Flames fans and you're looking at Jacob Markstrom, what he did last year and what he did this year, I think Jacob Markstrom's starting to find that game, Scott, that you paid 6x6 and gave him a no-move clause to sign him. So I'll get into who I think it is when we say all of the people that are nominated for this best player in Canada this week. But Jacob Markstrom starting to find his game in Calgary. You need that if you're going to make any push.
Yep, and if the Flames stay in it, he's playing the rest of the way. If they don't, maybe you give somebody else a start along the way. It's the Flames and the Senators tonight from the Saddle Dome. We move to Winnipeg, a team with a pair of nominees, including this guy.
There by Nikolaj Ehlers. Marner back into his own zone. Ehlers on the steal, scores! Nikolaj Ehlers gets his second of the game, 20th of the year.
Yeah, Mitch Marner's not going to love that highlight, nor is David Rittich, who kind of got caught trying to play the puck as Ehlers poked it past him. 3 goals and an assist over the Jets' 4 games last week. To me, Karen, it's as much about the quality of what Ehlers is doing right now as it is about the quantity. Like, 4 points over 4 games doesn't jump off the page, but the goals he's scoring, the assist that he had to Scheifele last week, Ehlers is having, I know he's been fairly consistent production-wise, it feels like he's having an even bigger year this year.
Yeah, talk about being consistent production-wise, Scott. This is his 5th straight year now. He has 20 goals on the season, 45 points. He's 15th in league scoring, 12th in goals. You talk about the importance of the goals he's scoring. Again, we can just point to that highlight that he had against David Rittich there. Scott, I look at Nikolaj Ehlers, and I think to myself, I'm like, is he one of the most underrated stars in the NHL right now just based on where he plays and the kind of game he plays, Scott, because he's so quiet in terms of off the ice, and you never really hear from him because there's always other guys on that team that speak out. I think Nikolaj Ehlers could potentially be a not if you, I don't want to put him in like the superstar category, but one of those upper echelon stars. And I think you're just seeing that he's starting to have one of the best, he's having one of the best years of his career, and it's just going to keep going and going and going.
Well, I would throw that out there to our listeners. Hit us up 960, 960 or 650, 650. Is Nick Ehlers still underrated, or has he crossed that threshold? It used to be Kyle Connor, and I feel like there's greater appreciation for him and maybe for the next guy as well, a different Winnipeg Jet who also made it onto this week's list.
There's a steal. Here comes Scheifele in on goal. Scores! Mark Scheifele, 3-1.
Yeah, Mark Scheifele, just your run-of-the-mill five-point week for him. He remains a top-ten scorer in the league this season. He's tied for eighth. Had 12 shots over the four games. Probably could have scored more than the two times he did. Paul Maurice predicted it. We're going to bring the clip back one of these days. Paul Maurice predicted this on the first day of training camp, that people were going to see Scheifele more and they were going to have a better appreciation for what he is. He did it again last week.
I've always thought Scheifele is just an incredible hockey player, Scott, and it's one of those things where he ends up playing in Canada where the likes are Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Auston Matthews. They always get talked about, but I think Mark Scheifele, he's one of the best Canadian centers out there right now. I mean, you look at where he is in the totem pole, I think he's right up there, and good on him. Like, he's showing the national media and the all the eyes in Canada that, you know what, like, I should be in the conversation with the top centers in this North Division, so... Good on him. He's not my pick for player of the week, but I think it's a well-deserved honor to be in this category this week.
Last but certainly not least, a guy who'll be on display at the Saddle Dome tonight, but he doesn't play for the home side.
Now Tkachuk in all alone. Tkachuk can ice it, shoots, scores! Brady Tkachuk, his second of the game!
Yeah, it's not Matthew, it's Brady. The younger brother comes into town. Sens aren't very good, but they did have a good week. They won two of their three games. Mm-hmm. Brady Tkachuk was front and center. He had 2 points in each of the Senators' two wins last week. 2 goals in the first one, 2 assists in the second.
Yeah, it's one of those things where he's starting to show himself, Scott, as maybe who should we talk about as the better Tkachuk player in the NHL right now. What this Ottawa Senators team does, night in and night out, Scott, I know talent-wise they're not there, and they're playing a bunch of young kids right now just because of who they traded away at the trade deadline. But man, oh man, like, I got to give DJ Smith some credit. Like, what this team is doing, trying to... They play hard every night, and again, Calgary gets to face them tonight. I don't know if they want to see Matthew Tkachuk because they are the Sens are 5-7 against Calgary this season. But I don't know. I'm just kudos to what he's doing with this young team, because in a season where they didn't have much expectation, some guys are definitely jumping to the forefront.
All right, quickly before we get to our first guest of the day, who gets your vote?
I am going with Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah, me too. Jacob Markstrom had a great week.
Been good. Yeah. I think he's just the number one star of the week in Canada. I mean, you just look at the quality of goaltending that he's giving Calgary right now. I mean, it's something they've been looking for, important for them. So, yeah, I'm going to go with him.
I will say this. I campaigned when we were having our back and forth to have either Bo Horvat or Braden Holtby on this list, even though each guy played just once. But if we take the backstory into it, I think you could have nominated either of those two guys.
It depends, I guess. When does your week start? Do you look at Sunday,
it's Monday
Scott,
through
Monday?
Sunday. It's Monday okay. through Sunday. So those are the 7 days we use. And again, it's only one game. So volume-wise, we haven't done that traditionally, but this has been a very unique set of circumstances. You can hit us up 960, 960 or 650, 650. Sometimes he texts the show. Today, he'll join it. We'll see if Rick Ball has any insight into what is expected to go down at the Saddle Dome tonight and his thoughts on what the Vancouver Canucks have been through and what he saw last night in Vancouver. That's next on Rintoul and Sermon. It's all been done. It's all been done. It's all been
done. Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Our show kind of started the way the Canucks game did last night. You weren't sure what was going to happen. Is it going to get out of control? But we're back on track.
Yes.
We're going to gut this one out.
Things sometimes don't go as you plan. You kind of get thrown into a situation and you're kind of like struggling about where you want to go and what you want to say. So I appreciate those bearing with us through all this, Scott. It's 2021. You never know what's going to happen, especially technology-wise.
Adapt and overcome. That's what we're all about. It's Rintoul and Sermon, set to be joined by Rick Ball here momentarily. You can text us throughout the course of the show at 960, 960, 650, 650. We've got a couple come in this morning. Trevor from Red Deer says, I'm an Oilers fan. It's not often I cheer for the Canucks, but I was definitely cheering for them last night. What a moral victory. It was a literal one as well, Trevor. Adnan in Calgary says, I didn't have the same feelings toward the Canucks as I did for the Sabres, simply because I feel the Canucks are built better than the Sabres are. I did feel more concerned for their health, more so because they might play for the enemy, but they are still human. I do think it helps the storyline as well. They're playing the big bad Leafs, who are assembled to win the Stanley Cup on top of the North Division. I think that helps some people cheer for the human story as opposed to the standing story.
Yeah, I think so too, Scott. But I think when you just look at, I mean, we just, when you see these guys speak even before the game, I mean, they just look like they've had so much taken out of them over the last couple of weeks. Is again, like the majority of your team, except for what, four players, got COVID. So not everyone of them were as bad as some, but to just see them get that out last night. And I just think, Scott, you just realize, and we've realized this in COVID, like there are things bigger than sports. And so there is the human element of this. And to see them come out there and do what they did, especially how the game started, Scott, I think was just awesome. And Dan texts into 660, 660. I don't think I've ever been so pumped for a regular season win. And in a season, Scott, that it probably doesn't mean much for the Vancouver Canucks in terms of standings. I mean, I think that says a lot right there.
Rick Ball will join us here momentarily. Flames back in action tonight. Might not be a good thing against what is supposed to be the get-well card Ottawa Senators. You mentioned it earlier. Senators have taken 5 of 7 meetings from the Flames, who are 2-4-1. I outlined the math earlier. It's gotten a little more out of control as the season has gone on. But there was a point here 2 weeks ago where literally the difference between the Oilers in the standings and the Flames in the standings was how each team had played against the Ottawa Senators. They look like a more Daryl Sutter group now. Is that enough? Is that enough against the Senators tonight? We'll talk about that and much, much more with Rick Ball, who joins us now. Baller, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
We are well. You'll be thrilled to know that since we last spoke, Karen has watched some World's Strongest Man.
See, we've got another convert.
So it's so funny because you were talking about it and that went on to a conversation between Scott and I about, you know, it's just a bunch of like dudes, you know, originally that were kind of trying to outdo themselves and stuff and figuring out what they could lift. And now they've made it like into a professional sport. And and I'm seeing these guys try and lift like 3 motorbikes and like carry it for like, I don't know, like maybe like 20, 30 feet, whatever the case may be. And I'm going like, this is ridiculous, but I can't take my eyes off of it.
Well, what I like about, like, most sports really don't have any practical application, right? I mean, shooting a puck right into a net doesn't really translate to the real world. But if, you know, if you have a neighbor who can carry 3 motorbikes, you could use that guy. I mean, you want to move a sofa, you're calling that guy. You know, the guy who can shoot a hockey puck, I mean, he may be athletic, but, you know, the guy in the other house, he can lift 3 motorbikes. That's a handy skill. So I hope you're inspired at some point, Karen, to try and pull a bus with a rope. That's all.
Well, you know, it's called useful muscles, right? He's got useful strength.
That's right.
Like, you know, he doesn't just do, you know, dumbbell curls. He's got useful. It's the application, like you say. Yes.
Functional.
So, functional. Yes. I don't know if I'll be going, you know, to lift some couches and training if I'm going to do that, but maybe I'll think about it.
I love it. Some guy opens his garage in the neighborhood. Hey, man, what seems to be the problem? We were supposed to have a mover here. We got 3 motorbikes we need to move. Tell you what, let me go get my friend. Funny thing, he does this for a living.
Yeah, Magnus Vermagnuson lives just down the street. Let me give him a call.
Be awesome. It would be awesome. Rick Ball joining us here this morning, play-by-play voice for Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. You're on the side of the business where you're not supposed to cheer, Baller, but did you find yourself cheering for the human story last night as the Canucks took back to the ice?
Yeah, that was a hard game not to have a favorite based on what happened. You know, what a way for them to win, right? I mean, they were outplayed by a wide margin in all aspects for the first 40 minutes, except for Braden Holtby in goal. He was unbelievable. And then they seemed to find their legs in the third period, battle back, tie it up, win the game in overtime. You know, Horvat gets a couple goals. Just a great story all around. And, you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to sustain it. I hope so, just because that would mean that the team is feeling a lot better. And that's the biggest, obviously, issue is their health. But that was a pretty good story last night for Vancouver. And not just the fact they won, but how they did it made for a nice night.
the realist in all of us knows what lies ahead for the Canucks, and the chances of them getting back into the race is so slim. And I was on with Tim McAuliffe on Friday, and we were talking about this on the air. Like, what would it be if somehow they got back into this race? And I don't know if we equate it to the Miami Marlins making the playoffs last year when they were the team that had the COVID outbreak in Major League Baseball. I'm not sure there is an equivalent out there, Rick.
Yeah, it'd be tricky. I mean, they have a ton of games. So the teams they're chasing are Calgary and Montreal. The two teams will have to leapfrog, right? So they've got six games in hand on Calgary and four in hand on Montreal. And they're 10 back of fourth place in terms of points. So it's a long shot, but it's not impossible. They would have to get on an incredible tear. But, you know, this crazy season, who knows? I mean, looking at it even from a Calgary perspective, it seemed like a week ago, they were dead and buried, and all of a sudden they get that win in Montreal. Even though they lost on Friday, they're now within 6 points, and they've got three games coming up in four nights against Montreal in Calgary, Friday, Saturday, Monday. And depending on what happens with the teams this week, they could have a chance to leapfrog over Montreal in the fourth place. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago people were writing off the Calgary Flames. So in this season, when you're playing the teams that you're chasing so often, I don't think anything is totally out of the question, even though it might be a long shot.
And let's look at this Calgary Flames team. Of course, they are playing Ottawa tonight. And Ottawa, unlike Edmonton, who went 9-0 against them, a sense of struggle, as the Sens have won 5 of 7 against Calgary. What have you seen when watching these games? Like, why has Calgary struggled so much against Ottawa?
Yeah, it's a real head scratcher, Karen. I'm not sure why. The thing is, you know, not to go back to Montreal as well, but they've lost 5 against Ottawa too. So, for whatever reason, the Senators have seemed to have the number of the Calgary Flames and the Montreal Canadiens. 10 of Ottawa's 15 wins have come against those two teams. So, I don't know. I have no explanation for it. Early on in the year, there were wild swings between games. Ottawa won the first game 6-1. Calgary won the second one 6-3. Ottawa won the third one 5-1. Calgary won the fourth one 7-3. So it's not like we've got a bunch of nail-biters going on. There was one shootout game, but it's just been a weird season series so far. On paper, the Flames are the better team. But, you know, give Ottawa credit. They have that youthful enthusiasm. They have a lot of really good young players. They just don't have a ton of experience yet. And there are definitely some holes in their lineup. And their goaltending wasn't very good early in the year. So, but on any given night, that team can make you work for it. And they've done a good job against the Flames. Now, having said that, this is a huge game for Calgary. They cannot take them lightly. Not that they should. I mean, obviously, the fact that the Sens have won 5 of 7, the Flames have to take them seriously. But getting back to what we were just talking about a moment ago, about Calgary trying to reel in Montreal, if the Flames are able to win this game tonight, and Montreal has 2 against Edmonton, they're in Edmonton tonight and Wednesday, that sets up a scenario where if the Flames sweep the 3 games against Montreal on the weekend in Calgary, they're in fourth place. So, again, as much as it's a tough hill to climb and they've got a lot of work to do and they need some help, it's definitely not impossible. And that's the way they have to be thinking, that, you know, treat every game like a playoff game. Play with the intensity they have been in recent games. Even the game they lost on Friday in Montreal, I thought Calgary played really well. They just happened to be on the wrong end of the score. They were probably the better team on the whole and had 4 goalposts, I think, in that game. But if they keep playing with that level of intensity, then their chances of reeling Montreal in are a lot better. And it starts with tonight against a team that, for whatever reason, they've struggled against.
And when it comes to looking at what they've done lately, Calgary, Rick, are they starting to play? They're figuring out that Daryl Sutter system a lot better. Like, he keeps on saying, you know, they're still trying to get it. They're still trying to figure it out after games. But are you starting to see signs that, yeah, they're getting it now and it's going in the right direction?
Yeah, I think, well, I'm sure we talked about this before. I thought pretty much immediately after Sutter took over, the play in their own end of the rink was improved, I believe. Mm-hmm. Their breakouts were more cohesive. They were more connected in terms of how they were playing in their own end. There were a few breakdowns still, and that was probably due to lack of familiarity with the system. Not that it was that dramatic a change. It was more about playing with tempo that Daryl Sutter wanted. But that part of the game, I thought, started improving right away after he took over. Their offense really dried up for a while. And, you know, was it a matter of puck luck? Daryl Sutter seemed to hint that it was more they just weren't getting any breaks, so they were running into some hot goaltending. They finally started to find the back of the net during that 3-game win streak. So, you know, if you can extrapolate from that the offensive side of the game is starting to come around a bit, coupled with the fact that I think they've been a much better team defensively, in terms of their structure, then yeah, they are. They do seem to be grasping what he wants in terms of how they're supposed to play and even systems that he wants to implement a little more. They've had it, and in a weird way, that what happened with Vancouver may have helped Calgary because they had a bunch of days off that they didn't expect to have and were able to practice and get some more practice time in, and I think that probably helped them when it comes to trying to do what Daryl Sutter wants and play the way he wants them to play. So in an odd way, as much as it's throwing a monkey wrench into the schedule, those extra few days of practice time, I think, helped the Flames fine-tune their game, and that may be a factor as well.
In conversation with Rick Ball this morning on Rintoul and Sermon, you mentioned how Ottawa has played against Calgary. It's such a weird year, isn't it, Rick? Montreal, as you mentioned, playing Edmonton tonight. Like, the Habs are 4-1 against the Oilers. Edmonton is 5-2 against Winnipeg. Vancouver's dominated Ottawa. Calgary's been really good against Vancouver. I can't figure out the pattern with any of these teams because the tougher matchups for some seem to be easy and vice versa.
It's why I don't gamble. Nothing makes any sense. And this year especially, right? I think the topsy-turvy nature of the NHL schedule and playing one team so many times. And it's very difficult when you play a team three or four times in a row to win all those games, right? That's not easy to do. So so I think you're seeing a lot of that dynamic at work as well. And then just the psychological stress and pressure of playing under the circumstances they're playing, not being able to, I mean, I hate to complain too much about it, but the reality is what makes the season so different is when you're on the road, you're sitting in your room staring at the wall, right, the entire time, unless you're at the rink. And it's tough when you're in a city for a week playing the same team three times. So there's a lot going on this year that wouldn't be happening in a normal season. And I think that might go a long way to explaining why we've seen these bizarre outcomes in terms of teams dominating one team and then losing to another one, but the team that they dominated beats the team that they lost to regularly. There's no rhyme or reason to any of it. So, you know, having said all that, it's also part of the reason, I think, why the Flames and even the Canucks have some hope, as long a shot as that might seem, because in this crazy year, that wouldn't surprise me at all if somebody does something, you know, gets on a huge run at the end of the season and manages to make some noise and even grab a playoff spot when nobody expected them to.
It's a really good point, Rick, because Montreal comes out, beats Calgary on Friday, and we're at the point of the season for the Flames and Canucks when you're talking about playoff projections where, like, one loss feels like three, and then comes out the next night, gets Carey Price back, and gets shut out by the Ottawa Senators. Montreal is this really weird team where I feel like if they get into the playoffs, they might actually cause some noise, and yet I'm not convinced they're going to get there as of yet. How about you?
That's exactly right. I mean, look, at the start of the year, in the first few weeks, they look like they were the best team in the division. And then they lose a few games and drop a few to Ottawa, and they fire their coach. You know, like, wow. And talk about a complete 180 in terms of expectations. And, you know, they've kind of sputtered along ever since. So I don't know what to expect out of Montreal. And, you know, the Flames have, like I said, the fact is they're playing the team they're trying to reel in three times in four nights at home coming up at this weekend. You know, they've got a chance. Again, it's going to be tough, but they're not out of it yet. And that seemed like, you know, if you would have suggested that a couple of weeks ago when Calgary was really struggling and in the middle of an eight-game losing skid, you would have been laughed out of the room. But not anymore. And like we talked about with Vancouver, with all those games in hand, they're not totally out of it either. So I don't know what to make of Montreal. I think they're probably a better team than they have been of late, but you know, they've had a tough go, and they're having a hard time finding any consistency. You know, they haven't really been getting much offense, which is odd. You look at you know, some of the numbers that they were getting out of the goaltending position, even with Carey Price hurt, and then you look at the fact that they were losing, and you realize they just have not been able to put the puck in the net at the pace that you expect them to with the talent. I mean, poor Jake Allen was hardly getting any run support at all, even though he was playing pretty well. So that's surprising based on, you know, what they have on paper. And, you know, again, they could be a team that goes on and wins the next eight games and comfortably grabs that final playoff spot, and this conversation is moot at that point. But who knows? I think it's going to be a crazy race to the finish line, and I look forward to watching it. It should be fun.
One team, we talk about how Montreal, if they can get on a heater, you know, they've got Carey Price, you know, they can make some noise in the playoffs. Toronto, obviously, we talk about as being the best team, but they have some question marks. Winnipeg, I think personally, they're set up to make a deep run, personally, with that depth. There's not a lot of talk about Edmonton, though. Yet Edmonton is 5-2, as Scott pointed out, against Winnipeg this season. What do you make of this Edmonton team?
Yeah, I mean, they've got two of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Smith's been playing extremely well. I think they're a really good team. I mean, they, you know, are there holes in the lineup? For sure. But I like their team, and I think they're for real. And I would agree with you. I think the two best teams in the division are probably Toronto and Winnipeg, but Edmonton's not that far behind. And, you know, to toss a coin at this point. No team in the Northern Division is perfect. I think probably Winnipeg, based on the fact that Connor Hellebuck is the best goaltender in the division. If I had to lay it, and I said, like I told you before, I don't gamble, but if I had to bet $5, I might put it on the Jets to come out of the division once we get to the playoffs and move on to the semifinals. But it's anybody's guess. You know, all three of those teams, I think, are good enough to do it. And who knows? You know, the fourth place team, we've seen it before. I mean, the argument used to be, do you just want to squeak into the playoffs and get knocked out in the first round? I mean, too many teams have come from low seeds and now to win. I mean, Daryl Sutter coached the LA Kings. They squeaked in at the end of the year and won the Stanley Cup as the 8th seed and steamrolled everybody doing it. So that argument goes out the window as well. But based on what we're seeing right now, you know, I'd probably say Winnipeg is the best team in the Northern Division at this point.
Rick, 10 or 15 years from now, if someone who never saw him play asks you about Patrick Marleau, how will you describe him?
Well, I had the good fortune of covering Patrick Marleau when he was a junior player. I was in the Western Hockey League back in the 90s, and he was a young player with the Seattle Thunderbirds. And I say to this day, one of the best players I covered in that time. I got the pleasure of calling games involving Jerome Iginla, Marian Hossa. I saw some great players in that time. I was there for 5 years doing the Kelowna Rockets. Patrick Marleau was right up there. And you know, it's just a great story that, you know, he's been a guy who's been able to stay healthy, who's been a top end player for a long time. And obviously it's tapering off now that he's nearing the end, but the fact that he's, I never expected him to break Gordie Howe's record. You know, I never saw that coming, but he was always a durable guy with high end skill. So the fact that he's been a great National Hockey Leaguer isn't a surprise to me, but doing what he's done, I don't think anybody could have seen that coming, because that seemed like it might've been untouchable at the time. So, and he's a great guy on top of it all, right? I mean, he knows Kelly Rudy really well. I probably saw the story on the weekend they were talking about it, and Kelly's talked about it before. But when Kelly finished his career with the San Jose Sharks, Patrick Marleau was a rookie, and he lived with Kelly and Donna the first year. And, you know, they talked about how Donna used to make them turkey sandwiches all the time. And, you know, here's this 18-year-old kid directly out of junior hockey from Aneroid, Saskatchewan, going to the Bay Area. I mean, talk about a culture shock. And, you know, Kelly and Donna took him in, and here we are all these years later, and he's about to break one of the most incredible records in the sport. So good for him. I don't know him really well, but anytime I've had a chance to talk to him, whether it was as a junior hockey player in the NHL, always impressed. He's a quiet guy, but, you know, just a really good player. I actually saw people debating, do you think he's a Hall of Famer? I'm like, are you kidding me? He's a Hall of Famer. Oh, he was never the very best player of his time. I'm like, I don't care. He was a top-end player. Won gold medals for Canada and has played more games than anybody else in the history of the NHL. And what is, I don't have his point total in front of me, but over whatever, how many points, 1300 points he's got in his career or whatever it is, like, give me a break. That's a slam dunk first ballot. No brainer. As far as I'm concerned, the fact that it's even a debate tells me how silly some people are.
Well,
and you know, good for him. I like the guy as a person, and I'm happy to see him reach a milestone that's amazing. I mean, how else do you put it?
We will invite you back on the next time we debate whether or not Patrick Marleau is a Hall of Famer on this show.
Oh, was that you?
It wasn't
you, that
just
guy?
Me. I wasn't just me. I put it out there, and I'll tell you, it was pretty mixed reviews.
All right. That's it. That's it, Scotty. I'm not coming back on until you change your mind, my friend.
I wasn't the one leading the campaign. I literally just put the open-ended question out there, and
yeah,
it was mixed reviews from our listenership.
Really?
Yes.
That's shocking to me.
What would be more shocking is if you wear a turtleneck tonight. Is that going to happen?
I want to get my hair going like that. Like, I don't know what he's done to that. Is he using some kind of a, like, has he got a hawk comb or something he's using in his hair now? Like, how does he get it to do that even?
It's pretty incredible. Did you see Murph rocking the turtleneck last night?
Oh, did he? I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I watched the game, but I didn't notice Murph in the turtleneck. Is he doing it now?
Yes, and we want to know if Rick Ball is going to get on this fashion trend.
Lord, is Ron Burgundy doing our wardrobe now or what?
He could be. He could be. Are you going to jump on board?
All right. I will. If you come around and admit that Patrick Marleau is a slam dunk Hall of Famer, I'll put a turtleneck on.
We'll get there. Thanks, Baller.
That's hilarious. All right. See you guys. Bye.
Thanks, Rick.
That is Rick Ball. Doesn't sound like he'll be wearing the turtleneck tonight, but he's willing to wear the turtleneck.
Well, at least Calgary had weather, Scott, where it's like, okay, you could maybe, like, think about wearing a turtleneck. Like, did Murph, like, wear that to the rink? Like, I could imagine how it was 25 degrees here yesterday. Like, a turtleneck and a suit jacket. I will say, Murph, if you're listening, I for one, liked it. I'm on that trend. Like, you know, he didn't have, like, the gold chain hanging out around it. Like, we've seen, like, you know, some other people when they tend to wear those turtleneck-style shirts. But I did like it. I thought it looked very on brand.
Canucks fans demanding he wears it as the team has not lost when Dan Murphy has worn a turtleneck on the broadcast.
And I will say this, Scott, the team is now 1-0 since you and I became partners on this radio station.
Well, there's that. Been a long time since they had played a game. Been a long time. A guy who's been doing it a long time won't be doing it any longer. We'll tell you who that is and get into it next on Rintoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
It's not just the kids that do it this way, Karen. This is how it's done now. Announcing things on Instagram or Twitter. That's how it breaks. I'm Scott Rintoul. She's Karen Sermon. Alex Smith today, after 16 years in the National Football League, decided to announce that he is retiring from the game he's been most associated with. After 16 years, he's done. He left Washington, was going to seek other employment. It hasn't come. He's going to move on to the next chapter in his life. Former number one overall draft pick of the San Francisco 49ers. Never lived up to that billing, but ended up being a pretty good quarterback. I'm not going to say great, but he ended up being a pretty good quarterback for the bulk of his 16 years.
Yeah, I mean, what he did with San Fran, Scott, I guess you could argue that injuries derailed that train there. And then, I mean, he led some pretty good teams in Kansas City as well. It's just, you know, Andy Reid saw a young guy out there that he thought was going to have a pretty phenomenal career, and Patrick Mahomes drafted him, and then the days were numbered in Kansas City. You look at what he did in Washington, you know, prior to that injury. I mean, he was pretty good there as well, Scott. But it's just, I mean, all of Alex Smith's career, it's just going to come down to this past season, I think. I mean, we can look at the numbers, and they were great, but the ability for him, Scott, to come back and play this season. I mean, I don't know if you'll ever see anything like it again, because the horrificness of that injury and the mental fortitude to try and come back from that, and the fact he almost died as well, you know, in this situation, it's just incredible. And I don't know about you, but that first time that I saw him put on that jersey and go on the field and take a snap, like, I almost didn't want to watch because it was so uncomfortable thinking of what he had been through. And I don't want to see that again. And I think he was going up against the Rams, if I'm not mistaken, and got sacked actually by Aaron Donald at one point. You're thinking, oh my God, like, I don't want to see this. But kudos to him. I would have liked to have seen him as a Dallas Cowboy backup this year, of course, because Andy Dalton is gone. I thought that'd be a good position for him. But I'm happy he's able to go out kind of on his own terms.
16 years in the league, played in 14 of those seasons, missed 2 years, one because of the leg near amputation that you just alluded to. He missed a season early in his career with an injured shoulder as well. Alex Smith is one of those guys I always wanted to succeed because everyone said he couldn't, and he never got where I wanted him to go, which was to a Super Bowl and leading a team to that. Certainly first and foremost in San Francisco, which is the team I hold most dear, but then Kansas City. He was always pretty good, and his coaches had so many great things to say about him. One of the things a lot of people didn't know when Alex Smith, the number one pick overall, struggled out of the gate, he lost his best friend to a suicide early in his 20s. That weighs on you mentally. He had six different offensive coordinators in his first 7 years in the league as well. He really struggled to find traction. He did provide some great moments, and you just talked about one of them. And I think that's what his career will end up being, moments you think of with Alex Smith. Yep. He led the 49ers to a playoff win against the New Orleans Saints in Candlestick, where he ran on a naked bootleg for a touchdown and then threw the touchdown pass to Vernon Davis with virtually no time left on the clock that won't be forgotten. And then when he was having what was arguably his best season to date in San Francisco, he gets a concussion. Colin Kaepernick takes the league by storm, and the 49ers, forced to make a decision, go with the younger, more athletic, maybe future prototype of quarterback in the league. At least that's what they were thinking at the time. Obviously, Colin Kaepernick didn't end up becoming that, and there's a different story attached to Kaepernick, obviously, from that point forward. Smith ended up in Kansas City, ended up being the mentor to Patrick Mahomes after some very good years with the Chiefs.
Yeah, you think about it, Scott, you think it's just unfortunate because he seems to have, well, he lost one starting job to injury, and you never want to lose a starting job to injury, but that happened in San Fran. And then he goes to Kansas City, and he's had some pretty good seasons there. And you've got one, I believe he had 1 year left on his deal or whatever the case was. And you're like, oh, wait, they just drafted my protege, and I have to go in there and basically be his mentor, knowing that I'm not going to be back next season. And he took them to the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken, that year as well. At Kansas City, people forget that Patrick Mahomes didn't take over for an Alex Smith that struggled. Kansas City was good at the time. So to know that, you know, once again, someone else is going to be taking over for you, I think that says a lot about him as a person, his personality, his mentality, always, you know, still, no matter what, trying to help out the younger guy. I think that says a lot about him. And has Scott, have you watched the ESPN, what is it, E60
on him? I did, yes.
Yeah, I watched it too. And you know me with injuries, right? Like, I don't want to see
you're a little squeamish at times.
This, for whatever reason, was not as bad. And maybe because I've had anatomy classes in my past where I actually got to play with, like, cadavers and stuff. So I've seen, like, legs broken down into, like, their, just into their parts. So it's a little different. I don't know why.
Play with like, cadavers is an interesting term to use, but I know what you're getting at.
Yes, like, but I mean, I've taken a leg or an arm and played with a tendon to see where, like, which finger moves and all that kind of stuff. So for whatever reason, this didn't bother me as much, other than kind of squeamish in my stomach because of what you did see. And the graphicness of it, but I'm happy. I'm just so happy that he gets to go out on his terms now. Like, that injury didn't, as hard as it was for me to see him snap a football again, it's pretty awesome that he gets to go, okay, I did it, I came back, and now I'm done.
Yeah, good for him. It was a good career. It was a very good career. It just isn't the great Hall of Fame career that you're hoping for when you draft a quarterback number one overall, and of course, always will be compared to Aaron Rodgers, who was the coin flip number one overall pick, ends up going 24th to the Green Bay Packers. And he is, in fact, destined for Canton at one point in time, whereas Alex Smith is not.
Yeah, of course, there was that, obviously, Scott, him playing up in Cal Berkeley there. And, you know, is Aaron Rodgers going to be drafted by kind of the hometown team there? I think it worked out well for Aaron Rodgers, so I don't think he's too concerned anymore about where he got drafted.
49ers fans will never let it go, but it is what it is. I'm Scott Rentoul. She's Karen Sermon. Thanks for joining us today. Your text and nations are 650, 650, and 960, 960. An interesting part of last night's broadcast was what Elliot Friedman had to say. Well, actually, this was Saturday. Talking about the Canucks again last night, but where he really made some waves was on Saturday. And I want to set this up for you because the hypothesis here is pretty interesting moving forward. And it's a bunch of stuff we don't know, which plays into another backstory going on in Vancouver. I'll get to that in a second. But Elliot Friedman, when the Canucks were finally cemented in their schedule, going to play Sunday, they were supposed to play on Saturday. And as Friedman said, hey, this was the biggest story of the week, and there's more to it than everyone originally suspected. Have a listen to what he said on headlines on Saturday night.
Look, it was the biggest story in the league this week, no question about it, after the trade deadline and JT Miller going public with his comments saying that we're not ready to play and we shouldn't play. And that night, Wednesday night, the players said the same thing to the Players Association on a Zoom call. They said, we are willing to return this season, but we are not willing to return as soon as Friday night against the Edmonton Oilers. Now, what I think was supposed to happen, guys, is that this was supposed to come down to Thursday morning. And on that day, 17 of the Canucks were supposed to go through their mandatory post-COVID examinations, the heart tests, everything that you have to go to be cleared to play. And that's what I believe the plan always was. We'll see where everybody was on Thursday morning, and then we'll all make the decisions. Well, on Thursday morning, the doctors took a look at those 17 players, and they said, look, right now, for Friday, only four of them would be cleared to play. If you give them a couple extra days and let them practice and get back into hockey shape, I guess, we're going to be willing to clear more. And that's where we are on Saturday. Travis Green said there's 21 skaters who skated today. Demko, Mott, and Ualevi still will not be available tomorrow. But that's kind of where we got to. That's how we got to this point today. So that's where we are. That's where the Canucks return to tomorrow night. I do think, Ron, there will be some long-term conversations that have to happen here between players and organization. They haven't really said much publicly about the team, but privately, I've heard they're upset, and I think there are going to be some fences that have to get mended here.
Players on the team, or the team is upset?
I think the players are upset. Right. With, the last couple of weeks were really hard, and I think they just felt that they were kind of in the dark about what was going to happen.
It's that last part that's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Are there long-term ramifications? Are there bad feelings between the players and the organization about the way things are handled? Now, I haven't heard a lot of that speculation in Vancouver, but Elliot Friedman, as you and I both know, Karen, is extremely well-connected. He doesn't go on air saying something like that without any type of foundation whatsoever.
Yeah, he's not just putting things out there just to get clickbait, Scott. Like, this is something that he's heard down the line, and he's just maybe connecting the dots from something that he's heard. You know, Scott, like, think about this clip that we heard from Bo Horvat on Friday, and I believe he was asked about what the support was like he got from the organization, you know, and I'm not sure if he was asked who else in that clip, but what he went on to say, Scott, was he said he was appreciative of all the support he received from his teammates, his family, fans, and stuff like that. I don't know if it was an actual admission to, like, a conscious admission by him, but he did want to, like, thank the fans and talk about how his families have been supportive and the teammates have been supportive throughout. So if you're putting these two things together, Scott, there could be some line that you can draw to connect, right, in terms of where some players may feel the organization maybe left them a little bit on the lurch in terms of what was going on.
Yeah, and again, we're left to speculate, but based on what Friedman said, there's a logical deduction to come out of this of, hey, we feel like we weren't a part of this process. When Friedman uses the term kept in the dark, that leads you to the conversation point of, was there enough communication when this was all going down? Hey, this is what it's going to be like coming back. And you wonder, Karen, in an age where players are more curious than ever, and we've seen player empowerment at its finest last week. Like, JT Miller stood up, and the players were empowered, and that's the reason this schedule got moved back. And look, I don't know if it's a couple of players. I don't know if it's widespread on the team. But if there is a general feeling among some of, don't feel like you guys had our backs, or don't feel like we were consulted enough in this process, that is fixable, because the last thing you want is the fraternity of NHL players that's greater than just the guys in that dressing room getting the sense of, oh, we're not treated particularly well, or there's not enough communication, because that is something that is demanded in today's day and age.
Yeah, and you're not thinking, like, I understand we're employees, but in a situation like this, like, we need to know more about what is going on and have more saying about how we're going to come back. Scott, I mean, it sounds like maybe there just was enough transparency. And when in terms of your health, I think, and the unknown, that's the one thing that you want to know. Like, you want to know when we're coming back. You want to know, okay, the organization has my back in terms of when we're coming back, because it's too soon. We can't come back right now. So I understand that if there may be some hard feelings, if certain players felt that they weren't getting the information they thought they deserved. Also, Scott, too, I mean, in a world where we have social media and Twitter as well, like, if you're finding out things via social media that a reporter is reporting versus hearing it from the team first, I mean, that could run some people the wrong way too, because you should be hearing it from your own organization before it's put out there into the entire world. So I could see if there's some mending of fences that need to come from this organization. It wouldn't surprise me.
We will get into that a little bit more, because that is a broader story than just Vancouver, one that's being talked about with media and the Canucks, but it really crosses all lines. It's not about one particular situation. It is a general question that we'll put out there next hour as well. But let's get to what they're saying.
What are you talking about, man?
What are you saying?
Not saying anything.
You're saying something?
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy.
Here's what they're saying.
The Vancouver Canucks making their return after almost 4 weeks between games. It's one of the big talking points in the NHL world today. On the flip side of that, the team that lost was supposed to take care of business. That team was up 2-0. Yes, that team also lost Zach Hyman. We'll wait for some sort of status update on what is a very integral part of Toronto's forward group as well. Jack Campbell should have had the overtime winner. Now, Jack Campbell has played very, very well for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but Kelly Rudy brought this up on Hockey Night in Canada on the weekend. And Mike Fuda, the former assistant general manager in LA, a guy who was there when Jack Campbell was a part of this organization, he took it a little further as well, because each time that Jack Campbell has lost, Jack Campbell has owned it and then some. Like, it's one thing to step up and say, man, I got to have that overtime winner, kind of let my guys down. But there have been games when he's performed well or hasn't been the reason the Leafs have lost, and it feels like he's taking on a lot of ownership. Rudy pointed this out on the weekend. Here's what Mike Fuda had to say on Toronto radio about it this morning.
I love the fact that there's an accountability factor, and that's great. Especially internally, with your teammates, when they know, like, it's easy. I think it's fine to stand up in front of your team in the dressing room and say, guys, whatever, I'm letting you down, I got to be better. But when you're constantly doing it on television, especially in a market like Toronto, I mean, even they're picking up, but it's now become a talking point on Hockey Night in Canada. Like, how down is he on himself? And I've told him personally, and I mean, I know, and because I just said, you don't need to do it, Jack. People know what you're all about. But when you start to do that constantly in the market like Toronto, especially when every Leaf fan and hockey fan is watching this in the middle of a pandemic with bated breath, because this is the team that has to go the distance, you start to, instead of just saying, wow, that's accountability, you start to feel sorry for him. And is the mental toughness there to get through it? And I think it's just something he's got to work on, because he is a mentally tough kid. But those post-game press conferences are getting hard to watch. The same thing when he doesn't have a great game. I mean, you just got to put it beside you and move on to the next game.
And I thought it was really fitting, Scotty, what Kelly Rudy did say about this on the broadcast, because of the fact that, like, he's being very harsh on himself. And we know the history with Jack Campbell. Like, what was the issue coming out of Dallas and that had, you know, was kind of worked on with Ranford and Dusty Emu when he went to the LA Kings, was the fact that getting it right upstairs, right, not equating his self-worth to how he does on the rink. So you just don't want to see him go down that road again. And that's kind of what you're picking up with some of these comments, because he is so hard on himself. They won 6-5 in Ottawa against Ottawa last Saturday. And he was, I think that's probably as harsh as he's been on himself in his post-game comments to that, even though he won the game. So you just don't want to see a kid that we've no struggle with this in the past start to go down this road.
That's the fear. And maybe he's not going that direction, but because of the backstory that you just mentioned, that's the fear that can come along with this. That's what Mike Fuda is talking about. That's what Kelly Rudy is talking about as well. Look, this goes the other direction with goalies sometimes as well. Remember when Matt Murray infamously said Brock Besser got lucky when he scored a hat trick against him? Like, there are people who go, all right, man, like, you're a little too high on yourself. Maybe tone it down a bit. But part of that has to do with everything Fuda is talking about. Look, you're in a pretty major market now. Like, you say something like that in L.A. after a game, there aren't a lot of people that pay it much attention. You do that in Toronto, it becomes a talking point for days on the airwaves.
It's a little bit of nitpicking, isn't it, Scott? Because what is their issue? But also, what is their issue right now? I mean, other than the power play, their issue is in goaltending, getting consistent goaltending. So it kind of snowballs on top of each other. That's their issue. And then if you're being as hard on yourself, and then, you know, we're picking out things that you're saying about yourself, it just kind of snowballs into a thing that you don't want to be a part of that. You don't want to be the story when it comes to being on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You want to be a story for the right reasons. The Vancouver Canucks were that last night. If there's a better feel-good story in hockey over the weekend, it would be Oscar Lindblom. I think we all know, or at least most hockey fans know, what he went through. He fought cancer. He got to ring the bell. Now he's back playing in the National Hockey League. And the Flyers had their Hockey Fights Cancer Night the other night. Every single member of the Flyers came up for warm-up wearing a purple and black jersey with Lindblom 23 on the back. Apparently, he wasn't expecting that. He did the solo lap by himself, and then they all came out wearing that jersey. Very cool scene. He was honored during the game as well, and you could see he got choked up on the ice and was asked about it after the game.
Yeah, it was. It was emotional, to be honest. I didn't expect to react like that when I skate on the ice. And I mean, it's just a lot of emotion, and I was trying to get it all in and focus on the game. But it was tough. I mean, it's been a tough year, or tough more than a year. And like I said, to be able to be out there with his team is amazing.
It's pretty cool to watch the Islanders at their bench tapping the boards with their stick. The Flyers obviously doing the same at theirs as Lindblom was honored. And you could see the tears welling up in his eyes, Karen.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see the Scott until you pointed it out this morning. I'm going back and reading on it. And it makes me emotional, too, because it's like, you know, things are bigger than hockey. And for what him have to go through to beat cancer, I remember when he rang the bell and we saw the video of it. And I was emotional watching it because it's a step to say you're getting healthy, right? It's a step. And you don't expect this to happen to a young kid. And he got it and he fought it and he came back. And it's an emotional thing. And good on him. Good on the Islanders and good on the Flyers and for doing that, not telling him to kind of surprise him, you know, just to honor him in a certain way. So it's good on them.
Not so much good on them for what is happening overseas. And I know not all of our listeners pay attention to big-time soccer in Europe. Super League, Super League, Super League. That's what they are planning on doing right now. 12 founding clubs are trying to break away from the current system in Europe. And this has come under fire big time. Gary Neville, who is one of the larger names in the sport as a player, as a commentator, he ripped into this decision that these 12 leagues are trying to make right now and the sanctioning that might go on around it. Have a listen.
Well, the reaction to it is that it's been damned, and rightly so. I mean, I'm a Manchester United fan and have been for 40 years of my life, but I'm disgusted, absolutely disgusted. I'm disgusted with Manchester United and Liverpool most. I mean, Liverpool, they pretend, you know, you'll never walk alone, the people's club, the fans' club. Manchester United, 100 years, born out of workers around here, and they're breaking away into a league without competition that they can't be relegated from. It's an absolute disgrace. And honestly, we have to wrestle back the power in this country from the clubs at the top of this league. And that includes my club. And I've been calling for 12 months as part of another group for an independent regulator to bring checks and balances in place to stop this happening. It's pure greed. They're imposters. They're imposters. They're nothing to do. The owners of this club, the owners of Liverpool, the owners of Chelsea, the owners of Manchester City, they're nothing to do with football in this country. There are 100-odd years of history in this country from fans that have lived and loved these clubs, and they need protecting. The fans need protecting. I've benefited from football hugely. I've made money out of football. I invest money into a football club. Now, I'm not against money in football, but the principles and ethos of fair competition and the rights to play the game so that Leicester win the league, they go into the Champions League. Manchester United aren't even in the Champions League. Arsenal aren't even in the Champions League. You watched them earlier on today. They're absolute shambles of a football club at the moment. Tottenham aren't in the Champions League. And they want a God-given right to be in there. They're an absolute joke. And honestly, the time has come now. Independent regulator, stop these clubs having the power base. Enough is enough.
Most fans echo his sentiments, Karen. And this brings up a bigger conversation about what is a sports team? Like, obviously, in North America, for the most part, there's a couple exceptions, but most of it's privately owned business.
Yep.
But it's a public entity to a certain degree. And when you see clubs doing what they are trying to do in Europe, and they've made no bones about it, yeah, we're going to do this to make more money. Like, that's why we're doing it. The good of the game, that is secondary. Literally, there's quotes from a board member saying this right now. This is where fans have to remember they have power. They really do, but it takes unification.
And the problem is, Scott, I believe it was Gary that said it, or it could have been a guest that was on the 6:50 morning show. I can't remember where I heard it, but it was like, okay, so if the fans do revolt in Manchester City or Man U, and, you know, say 10,000 people decide they're not going to renew their season tickets because they don't want this to happen and they're embarrassed for their team. The problem is they're going to be able to fill those 10,000 season tickets pretty darn easily with another group of people as well, which is unfortunate. You look at this, Scott, and what do you think of when you think of soccer in its purest form? I think of kids, you know, just playing a game, no matter how much money your family makes, whatever, just you can go out there and you can play this game. It's a game for everybody. You have a ball. You can play it. You know, you see kids in third world countries with bare feet. You see kids, you know, there's a lot of other kids in, that live in poor areas in England, and they can just go out there and play this game. It is a game for everyone. And to think that these teams and organizations and franchises that are already listed as Forbes top 10, you know, richest franchises in the world in any sport, it's like, it's just embarrassing to me that they just want this for more money. Like, it's all it is. It's embarrassing to me.
It's the worst part of professional sports, the capitalistic side. And as Gary Neville said in that clip, and I think most people are on board with this, I understand they have the right to earn money, and who am I to begrudge players for making millions of dollars, owners raking in a bunch of money as well? Okay, that's fine. But there is a threshold. And as you mentioned, it takes unification. If 10,000 people say we're not going to renew, there can't be 10,000 behind them and say, well, you know what? I know that I'm not really against this, but this might be my only chance to get tickets. It takes everybody working together because there is strength in that. There is strength. Mm-hmm. You vote with your wallet, but everybody's got to be on the same page when it comes to that vote if you're actually going to make change. It's a concept we can get into with our next guest. We are thrilled to have him join us as a regular beginning today, and we'll introduce you to him next right here on Rintoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Just to follow up on the last story we hit there, Karen, in what they're saying. Text in on this if you want in on the conversation. 960-960-650-650. And we'll ask Donovan Bennett about this as well. As a fan of sport, as a supporter of a team, there are things you're willing to pay for and things you're not. And when your team loses your trust to a certain degree, that's one of the first steps fans will take. We've seen that with hockey teams before. We're talking about this in the context of the Super League that's being formed.
Yeah.
But the general question is this. Like, at what point as a fan do you say, okay, no more from me? Or what is your first measure? Like, we've seen people in the past saying, I'm not proud of this team, whatever that team might be, Karen, and I'm not going to buy their merchandise or I'm not going to buy tickets. Yeah, I'll still watch the games. There are other people that say, you've lost me, and I'm not coming back until X, Y, and Z are done.
It's funny, Scott, because I have been in a situation with my NFL team, and not in terms of so much I financially support them. I mean, I bought a Cowboys jersey a long time ago, but really don't have that much merchandise. I don't go to games because, obviously, I live in Vancouver. But I had the moral question a few years ago with the Dallas Cowboys because of the fact they'd signed Randy Gregory, who we all know what his history was like when he was with Carolina and what he was accused of, and then the Cowboys bring him in, they defend him and this stuff, and it's, again, I had a hard time struggling with this because I felt ashamed, disgusted by how they were defending him just based on the news that we knew came out of that situation, Scott, but, you know, it's like, do you still want them to win? Am I going to not watch them on TV? I mean, I will admit, I still watch them. I still wanted them to do well, but you have this conflict of, you know, internal fight with yourself about at what point do I just say, I got to walk away because this is wrong. And that's different situation because it's a little bit, you know, it's a bit more of a moral compass in terms, but you could say greed is just as much as a moral compass. So where do you put the line?
Well, everybody prioritizes different things, Karen.
Yeah.
And so it's not a different situation. It's just, what is your priority list? And as a fan of your team, win or lose, are you proud to be a fan? Like, you can have a team that struggles, but you're still proud to be a fan of the organization. Say, this is just a downturn for us. And I like these players, or I like the direction that we're going down the road, or I really like what this team represents to our community and the back and forth that we have and how important it is. And then there's the opposite, where you're a little bit disgusted by it, whether it's for ticket prices being raised or ownership in some situations not spending enough money on the roster, not showing an investment that way, or operating other businesses in a way that you don't agree with. And everybody has a little bit of a different compass on it. Hey, some fans separate it completely. And they say, look, I can't bring my moral compass into the sporting world. I watch for purely the sports aspect of it. And if I bring my moral compass in, then I'm just going to be disappointed, so I don't go down that road.
Yeah, Leafs hater Steve, I'm not sure exactly which team he's talking about, but he says, if it gets to a moral question with my team, I'm done. And Leaf, let us know who your Leaf hater, let us know who your team is, because that could be the Vancouver Canucks, and I guess you could go down that road as well. But yeah, it's just where do you put the line? Like, if you're looking at greed when it comes to the Super League, I mean, it's absolutely embarrassing what these teams are doing, because they're putting money ahead of anything pure in this game, Scott. Like, and like I said in the last segment, these teams are some of the richest teams in the world, and they're doing this for one reason and one reason only, and that's to become more richer.
Yep. They are. And will you support that as a fan? Will you not? There's a lot of disgusted fans, but what steps do you take? Or do you just sort of say, I don't like that, but I'm still going to be involved in it? Travis in Red Deer says, Blue Jays and Roberto Osuna, good example. I couldn't cheer for him. I'm glad they traded.
Yeah. Again, similar situation to what happened with Randy Gregory. And it's a situation that happens away from the field, nothing on the field, but you're questioning your view. If you maintain ties with someone like that, what does that say about the organization? So I understand that, yeah. When they traded him, you felt kind of like a relief. Good, get rid of him.
Greg Ballack, do we have our next guest on the line, my friend? Not yet? All right, we are still trying to hook up with Donovan Bennett, who is going to be a regular on this program. We're looking forward to having him on every single Monday. Given the way the program has changed here in the last month or so, Karen, now that we've got a four-hour program and it's two markets for the entire time, we have the ability to bring on a couple more regulars, and we're thrilled that we're going to be able to have Donovan join us every single Monday.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it, Scott, because for those who don't know him very well, he's very versed in a lot of different subjects as well and very passionate about a bunch of different subjects. So we're definitely looking forward to talking to him about him. I want to ask him some stuff about the CFL. I want to ask him some stuff about the NBA. So looking to get in that conversation. Scott, just more on what we've been talking about right now. This came into 960-960 from Gary, who says, I've been an Arsenal fan since the late 80s. I've bought multiple kits from the team, but I don't know where my loyalty is now with the Super League. I don't agree with it, and I'm wondering if I'm changing my colors for a team. Like, that's someone who's been a fan for over 30 years, you know, because, again, this is all about greed. It's all about one thing. And when you put greed above everything else, it can change people's feelings.
Well, I brought that up before. I really have. Yeah. I brought it up, and not because of this breakaway Super League, but what would cause you to part way with your team? And there are some people who say nothing. There's nothing at all that could cause me to part ways with the team. And there's others who say, well, okay, if this happened or that happened, or until they are run by somebody else, until they are owned by somebody else, I'm not going to give that corporation any part of my money. Jen says this, I've never gotten past Deflategate. I always root against Brady, no matter which team he plays for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to clarify, I was saying Greg Hardy. I think I said Greg Hardy the first time and then changed it to Randy Gregory. Randy Gregory plays for the Dallas Cowboys right now. Not to be confused, because very different people, very different situations. Greg Hardy, yes, the one. I just want to clarify that.
Yeah, Greg Hardy is the guy who had multiple domestic investigations against him. Mm-hmm. At one point, the allegation was that he picked up his then-girlfriend, threw her onto a couch or a bed that had multiple weapons
guns
on it, and implied that he was going to use one of them against her.
And then the Cowboys signed him, so good.
Deflategate's always an interesting one to me, and I know that's not exactly what Greg Hardy was. Jen brings that
no,
up. Like,
no.
Deflategate to me was never a big deal, and honestly was such a red herring in terms of discipline. Like, as someone who's played football for a really long time, there are so many other things that I consider cheating above taking a little bit of air out of a football, honestly. Like, that's nothing. And that to me was, okay, a whole bunch of things have happened here. The other teams in the league don't like the Patriots very much. You guys are always too light on the Patriots. You got to do something against the Patriots. Like, taking a little bit of air out of football, honestly, is nothing. It's nothing.
Well, and I look at it too, like, Spygate was way more egregious in my mind, Scott, in terms of cheating.
Yes.
Because you're going and actually taping practices and having insight into what the other opposition is doing. Like, that is way more egregious than taking air out of footballs. I'm with you. I actually thought it was kind of funny the entire time. Like, really, this is what we're talking about? Just because it became comical. You know, just how much effort we put into taking, like, how much he should get suspended for taking air out of footballs. And again, I don't even know how much it affected the outcome of the game. So there's that. But yeah,
it was the equivalent. Tom Brady getting suspended 4 games for that is the equivalent of being thrown in jail for a year for jaywalking. Yeah, technically it's illegal, but it's a slap on the wrist type of crime. Nobody got hurt. Oh, that's why they won? I don't think so. I don't think that's why the Patriots won games.
No, I don't.
Tequila Tim. Tequila Tim texts in about things that might cause you to leave your team. Tequila Tim says signing Messier was tough to take.
Yeah, well, when you look at where the fan base got put Messier in the hierarchy of players that they hated, I could see as a Canucks fan, that would be a tough one to think about. I will say, Tequila Tim, though, did you still stick with the Canucks? Are you Canucks fans now? Did you go away from them when they signed them? Or were you still kind of just in the background, just kind of waiting to see what happened? Be interesting to see, because I think fans of the team are still fans of the team, Scott. You know, there's no moral compass when it comes. Well, maybe there is some moral compass in terms of signing Mark Messier.
Jimmy says, if the Bears traded for Carson Wentz like they were rumored to, I probably would have sat out from watching this season. Really? Why? With all the bad quarterbacks they've had in Chicago, Carson Wentz is the thing that's going to cause you to jump off the Bears bandwagon? They've had a lot of bad quarterbacks there.
Are you telling me that Mitch Trubisky you think is a better quarterback than Carson Wentz? Andy Dalton? Really? Scott, Andy Dalton? I think I'd rather have Carson Wentz than Andy Dalton. Because like, I think Carson Wentz can find his, you know, his stuff again.
If we throw that out there to our listeners, like, what would you rather support? Carson Wentz-led team or an Andy Dalton-led team?
Carson Wentz every day. Any day.
There are some questions as to whether he'll ever get back what he had in 2017. There are some questions about that, and if he's going to get it back, it's probably going to be with Frank Reich and the Indianapolis Colts. I'm just interested in an organization that has not exactly had this laundry list of Hall of Fame quarterbacks. In fact, in my lifetime, the Bears have not really had a great quarterback. Like, Jay Cutler is the most talented quarterback they ever had. Jim McMahon led them to a Super Bowl. Yeah, he's the guy who quarterbacked that 15-1 team that went on to dominate and had one of the greatest defenses of all time. But, man, like, Rex Grossman took that team to a Super Bowl. And Carson Wentz is like the breaking point. Hey, man, maybe that's what it is, Jimmy. I mean, maybe it's just the war of attrition has finally caught up with you with all that bad quarterbacking.
It's just thinking about bad. Yeah, you just have like it's like almost like trauma in thinking back about all the bad quarterbacks they've had. I don't get it. Like, I would be, I think there's a list of quarterbacks, Scott, and I think Andy Dalton would be one of them personally that I would put above not cheering for my team anymore. And I don't think Carson Wentz would be one of them. He seems like a good guy too. He's very invested in the community. I guess that doesn't equate to wins and losses on the field though.
Hacksaw sends in, if my team trades for Johnny Hockey, they're dead to me. I take it Hacksaw, who sends that into 960-960, is not a Flames fan. Or maybe he is. Who knows? JT in Alberta. I stopped watching the Flames and cheered for the Leafs during the Bertuzzi era in Calgary. Dude broke a guy's neck, says JP. Accident or not, I didn't want a guy who makes that level of bad decisions on my team. That will be viewed a lot differently in different fan bases. But JT said, I just couldn't do that. That was the one guy that I couldn't personally cheer for. Brad Marchand is a name that would polarize a lot of fans in Vancouver. If the Canucks somehow acquired Marchand, there would be a bunch in the fan base that said, well, don't really like the guy, but he's really good, which is the way that I think a lot of people saw the Messier signing in Vancouver. Okay, one of the greatest leaders in the history of the game, or that's the reputation, and it really stings that he beat the Canucks in 94. I guess if he comes here and does that for the Canucks, I can get on board with it.
But I guess, too, if I'm looking at Brad Marchand, I'm thinking he's still producing at such a high level, Scott. So if I'm a fan, it's like, is the production level on the ice more than what he did in his past? Again, these are things to struggle with. You know, there's a bit of the what are you willing to stomach and what aren't you willing to stomach? And I think if Canucks fans, prove me wrong, 650, 650 or 960, 960, like if you could have a Marchand on your team right now, would you take him? Like, would you? I think fans would.
It's no different than the Messier question.
Yeah.
It's not. It isn't. Like, Messier was coming off an 84-point season in New York, and it's the bad and bitter taste in your mouth of him being the captain of the team that knocked you off in the Stanley Cup final. While Marchand was not the captain of that Bruins team that knocked the Canucks off in 2011, he was one of the central faces of that team and has remained that ever since.
A minor Matt in Abbotsford. If the hiring of Iron Mike and subsequent exodus of players and personnel, as well as the acquisition of Messier, didn't push me away from the team back in the day, I'm not sure anything will. There's got to be something that could break me, but I'm not sure at what point that is. That's from minor Matt in Abbotsford. I mean, true. If you're willing to stick through that, Scott, then maybe it has to be something like taking greed or moral compass that comes into facto push you away.
This is a good question that came in. What's the difference between players making super teams and super teams making super leagues, if you can stick with all the supers in that question that comes in? I see them as entirely different. Entirely different. What is being done in Europe right now, or what is being proposed to be done by these 12 teams, is entirely about greed. It's not about winning. It's about bankroll.
When
LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh get together, or what they did in Golden State when they brought Kevin Durant in, what they're trying to do in Brooklyn right now, that's about winning. That's about winning championships. And people don't like the what they consider a non-organic manner of it happening. Like, people more are on board with the story of, hey, here's what we drafted, developed, built infrastructure around. These guys all came up together, and then they became a dynasty. Like, people are more on board with that story than what they consider to be manufactured. But here's what's always fascinated me about the idea of people cheering against super teams. When GMs do it, we hail them as these, like, revolutionary geniuses. Yep. Good for you. Like Danny Ainge in Boston. When he got the big three there together, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen. Wow, look at Danny Ainge. What a genius. The players do it, and for some reason you don't like it?
Much player empowerment, Scott.
I think it's great. Like,
I think it's great, too.
I'm a fan of it, whether you like that team or not. And what do we need more in sports? We need teams, players that people are either in on or out on. That's one of the great things about super teams.
Exactly. And you've seen the change, Scott, even in how you have your fandom because of this. Like, people are LeBron James fans now. They'll cheer for Cleveland. They'll cheer for Miami. They'll cheer for the Lakers. They're a fan of him. It's a very different way of doing things versus back in the day. And this text comes into 960-960. And this is an interesting one, Scott, because it leads to a bigger question, because it says, I was a huge Sammy Sosa fan, but when him and Bonds did what they did, I will never cheer for a cheater. And you can put Mark McGwire in there as well, obviously. And again, that says, like, you have to ask the question, what are you willing to accept? And again, cheating in the form of taking enhancements to better yourself on the field is one of those things where a lot of people can't stomach, because they're physically altering their body. You know, they're not going on spying on someone in the field. They're not deflating footballs, but they're physically altering their body to be better. And I have a hard time with this, because I know a lot of people says, well, these guys should be in the Hall of Fame, just put an asterisk beside them. I mean, everyone was doing it. But I mean, I look at someone like Ken Griffey Jr., who's never really been in that conversation. We assume that he was clean the entire time, and I'm going to take him at face value. But I look at him, and I don't want to even put him in the same category as Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds.
I would put them in. I would put them in the Hall of Fame. And I'll tell you why I'd put them in the Hall of Fame. Because baseball has gotten off scot-free on it. Baseball reaped the benefits of those guys bashing baseballs out of the park. And they knew what was going on, and they didn't do enough to outlaw it. So by the letter of the law, while we all knew that they were cheating, and I wasn't a Bonds fan, not at all. But if baseball is not going to have the stones to take away the home runs that Barry Bonds hit out of the park and say, well, you make your own decision, fans, and they're going to leave it to the writers to be the moral compass for their own league, sorry, put them in the Hall of Fame, and put the steroid stuff on the plaque. If you want to make a steroid wing and put them in it, that's fine. To me, they are historical figures within the game, and the Hall of Fame is quite literally a museum of your sport from when it began to where it is now. I don't like Bonds. I don't like what Sosa did. I don't like what McGuire did. But if baseball is not going to be able to step up to the plate, pardon the pun, put those guys in.
And I understand with you, and I agree with you, Scott, that baseball reaped the rewards of what those guys were doing, because look at where like the numbers were in the fandom was. And if you go back and you watch that 30 for 30, long gone summer, I think it's called, the one with Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa battling out for the home run title, and just seeing how fans flooded back to watching baseball again, I mean, that was huge for the sport. I just have a hard time thinking about putting guys, and I know I just have a hard time putting guys who have admitted putting stuff in their body to enhance their game, whether or not baseball turned a blind eye, putting them in there with guys that didn't.
Okay. Okay. So is cocaine a performance enhancer?
Oh God, you're going to go here. Well, are you going to bring up the 80s Oilers? Come on.
I'm not bringing up the 80s Oilers at all. I'm saying that for, I don't know, decades in baseball, amphetamines and other substances that enhanced performance, they're almost looked on like in sort of a classic, oh man, look what the guys used to do in the 70s or 80s. Well, those uppers were helping performance to a certain degree. I'm not arguing for steroids in baseball. I'm not. What I'm saying is if the sport itself can't govern itself properly, why are five or six players going to be the ones that wear that label? Like, everybody knows they took steroids, they took PEDs. Just make it a part of the story. Just put it in there, because you don't have the stones as a league to take away X number of Barry Bonds home runs.
I mean, you make a compelling argument. You do. And I guess my argument, I don't know if I can find the words to come back as compelling. I have a hard time just thinking to myself, like, these guys knowingly did it, and I want them in there with someone who did it the right way. And I know it was the right way at the time for a lot of these guys, but I do think there should be some sort of punishment for it.
Ian in Dunbar says, cheaters are cheaters, whether it's Little League or the bigs. I don't want those people influencing my kids. Yes, Ian, and that's why we argue against that stuff. I absolutely agree with that. And that's why we don't want the message out there that, hey, here's what you got to do to hit home runs. No question about it. But that's why I say put it out in the open. Hey, these guys did something you were not supposed to do. However, it wasn't strictly outlawed at the time. Nobody took away their home runs. So by the fact that Barry Bonds hit a billion bombs, we had to put him in the Hall of Fame.
Maybe it's just they don't like Barry Bonds. This could be that.
Sure.
Only a little personally. DM Scott, this one comes in. I threw the question out there. Deed in Cloverdale says, Karen, you as an Oilers fan would take on a Marchand and call it okay after we as Canucks fans, being a long-suffering fan base, develop morals and choose not to want dirty rats from other teams join. By the way, we'll have our own dirty rats. They're okay. So that comes from Deed in Cloverdale. As a Canucks fan, he would not want Brad Marchand on his team. Again, comes down to morals, I suppose.
A number of our listeners are experiencing this today, so I'm just going to give you an update on what's happened with Donovan Bennett. There are cell towers out across this country right now, and so people are without cell service, so we have not been able to connect with Donovan. We're going to try to figure this out through technology and have Donovan on next segment. It has not been him not prepared, not ready, or just deciding, you know what, I don't want to talk to those guys today. Literally can't reach the man on his phone.
Literally has no cell service.
We will get into that. Kevin Bieksa had some really interesting comments about the media in Vancouver. We can spill that into the rest of Canada as well and get your opinion. That's all coming up next on Rintoul and Sermon.